Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to On Texas Football. I'm Bobby Burton, your host. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined today by Charles Power. He is the On3 National Scouting Director for College and Recruiting. Charles is the man behind the curtain for On3 in many respects. Works in conjunction with guys like Jerry Hamilton, Sam Spiegelman, Chad Simmons, those guys, to deliver recruiting rankings and also our national college rankings as well as you go through this. He's also an aficionado of the draft as well as recruiting. And so I thought it'd be a good chance for you guys to introduce you guys to him as well as get his key takeaways on this first day in the draft. Charles, welcome in and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess I'll just ask you right away, what are your major takeaways that you see that matter as it relates to recruiting that follow through all the way through the draft? What are some big takeaways right now?
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of, positional trends kind of continue throughout the draft. You know, I think the wide receiver position, we've seen some of that. One of the things I've been tracking over the last couple of years is like production with top receiver draft picks. I think we saw a lot of that. I think the first four receivers drafted in this draft, I think they went in the top 12. I think four went in the top 12. They averaged, 1,300 yards as seniors, and I think maybe like over 19 touchdowns.
So you're talking about as high schoolers,
as high school seniors. So, I look at receiver as like a true skill position. And I think one of the more common through lines, you see different types of receivers. You can see a 5'9 speedster or a 6'4 possession guy. But I think one of the more common through lines is the top draft picks are usually very productive at high school. It's not a position where you see a lot of athletes convert there. And in a lot of these guys, you think about it, a lot of these receivers are three and out receivers. They're in college for 3 years. So the guys who are best equipped to hit the ground running with that, like typically do pretty well. With offensive line, I think we see, some different types. You have an Evan Neal who is, 6'7.5", 390 coming out of high school, kind of reshapes his body and becomes a top 10, pick. Charles Cross is a guy who we were really high on. Was one that was kind of had almost exactly kind of what you would want physically in terms of the arm length. He was, a streamlined 275, moved really well, good video. But then you have all these developmental prospects, guys who start off at FCS, like a Zion Johnson, who went to a non-scholarship school at Davidson. And then goes to play at Boston College when they hired the Davidson coach. Trevor Penning, who was really just kind of, I think, missed a little bit by schools in that area. He was a late convert to offensive line. The Tyler Smith from North Crowley was a late, a late switch from DL to offensive line. So that's something I think you see a lot there. I'm trying to think what else.
Cole Strange, the young man from UT Chattanooga, University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, originally signed with Air Force out of high school as a defensive end, moved to offensive line and transferred to Chattanooga and ends up at the end of the first round with the Patriots.
Yeah, for sure. I think the quarterback, tracing it back to the 2019 cycle, which is kind of the three and out cycle that this draft is in. One of the talking points in that recruiting cycle was it was just a really bad year at quarterback nationally. And I think that's not a coincidence that the one quarterback in the first round is Kenny Pickett, who was in the 2017 cycle. So that's kind of, bared out a little bit with NFL draft. That's one thing that's why I think we can provide a little more insight into this, look at the draft. You see a lot of the trends surface in the recruiting cycle, and then they come up like 3 or 4 years down the line.
Well, you were managing the 24/7 sports rankings back in what years were you there?
So 2019 was my first cycle that I was involved with the national team, and then 2020, and then, you know, 21, and we started, I think the last initial ranking that I helped put together was the initial 2023 one for them. Okay. So, in, you know, to compare the 2019 cycle, which I think we did a good job of, if you look at it, I think we had 9 5 stars were first rounders last night. But if you go back and look at that, it was a boom or bust cycle. Like there's a lot of busts among the five stars. Some of it's injury related, off field, you know, just some guys who maybe just haven't, you know, realized their potential. And then some guys that we were high on that, you know, went really high. And then the 2020 cycle which is next year's draft, is going to be phenomenal. Like that was as good of a cycle that I've covered in recruiting. And I think it's not a coincidence that you see a lot of NFL teams that are really trying to stockpile picks for that first round.
I want to get into a couple topics with you here. I was looking at this and really 20, I think 21 or 22 of the 32 picks yesterday were 4 stars or higher. Mm-hmm. That's 2/3 essentially of a draft class with really what 1/10 of the number of players that total players that signed Division I. That's a great hit ratio. And I made comment of that. Just give you some notes. Of the 6 wide receivers taken in the first round, and you mentioned this, all 6 of them were ranked 4-star or higher in high school. At defensive line, 3 of the 4 were 4-star or higher. Edge, this was interesting, 3 of 3, 4-star or higher. 2 of whom I think were 5 stars. Cornerback, 3 of 4. Safety, 3 of 3, ranked 4-star or higher. The outlier in that group, and I know you know this, and that's what we were talking about. Only three of nine of the offensive linemen were ranked 4 stars or higher. And you're right, it's because they converted from defense. They just slipped through the cracks. I also think that it's another category here, and that's just the fact that they grow so much in college. Like you take a guy that's 250 pounds in high school, and all of a sudden he's not playing 4 sports anymore, and he ends up being 300 pounds. He can really focus on one thing or another. How do you, as a guy that handles recruiting, how do you take that information and that throughput, as you put it, and try to make a difference when it comes time to rank recruits?
Yeah, and this is something I probably have done more work, like research on offensive line than any other position. It'd probably be offensive line and quarterback are the two that I've really like studied the most. And I think what we found with offensive line is, like you said, it's a developmental position, right? It's physical development and it's highly technical. I think the more information, and I think we're getting better at it, the more information we have about just athletic indicators for these guys. And really the thing that I've focused on the most in the last couple of years is their frames, you know, looking for indicators of growth potential. And that's something, you know, schools now, when they get guys on campus, like some schools, like there are companies and there's technology people are working on where you can, you know, kind of size up a guy, measure their joints, you know, look at their arm length, hand size. You can kind of ballpark a weight range that they could get into if they get in a Power 5 FBS strength and conditioning program. So, you know, in terms of us, we just try to get as much of that information as possible. Now, I think one thing that's important to consider too is we're primarily focused on ranking the prospects that sign with FBS. So, you know, like a guy who, like a Zion Johnson who goes to Davidson, is like a 240 pound golfer, he's not going to come across my desk as much as, you know, maybe a guy who goes to Wake Forest, for instance. So that's something that we're kind of a little at the mercy of the prospects that sign with FBS. Now, I also think that, you know, FBS schools, especially schools that aren't getting the first crack at your Evan Neals, your Kenyon Greens, the guys who everybody knows are like kind of your ready-made offensive linemen physically. I think those schools could do a better job of, you know, taking developmental offensive linemen. Now it's a little counterintuitive because you're basically kind of investing in, you know, it's an investment. You're saying this guy's not going to play for a year or two. We're going to put weight on him. We feel good about his frame. And I think the way things are advancing, hopefully that's kind of how it goes. But like a guy like Trevor Penning, I went back and watched his video. He moved to offensive line his senior year. I mean, he had the shot put, he had the size, he had the frame. He was 6'6", 260. He's a guy who I heard, like, if he was considering maybe going to junior college as a qualifier, if he goes to junior college, that guy's getting 15 offers as a one and out guy. And it just kind of happened where he just, you know, the local schools kind of missed on him. He didn't come across FBS radars, and that's how it is. But it's not, there's your Zion Johnson types who just come, you know, the guy gained 80 pounds. Like, that's, I get it. But then, you know, schools miss sometimes. And I think offensive line recruiting can be a little counterintuitive. It's, do we take the guy who can play now, or do we take the guy that could be a first round draft pick?
This is interesting, right? So back, you know, another, a team. So you mentioned the young man from Northern Iowa, Trevor Penning. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, he's from Iowa. Well, Iowa does a tremendous job historically of finding in-state linemen that end up turning into first round draft picks or NFL players. They even had one lower in the draft, Tyler Lindenbaum, Linderbaum. How do you see that? I mean, that is a perfect example of nobody is perfect, right? Yeah. Even someone, Kirk Ferentz is terrific, right? We think he's terrific finding and growing offensive linemen into pro prospects. Mm-hmm. But even him in his home state missed the highest rated, or the guy that ends up being the best of the group, at least in the NFL thought process. Yeah. You know, it shows you a little bit of how much offensive line recruiting can be hit or miss.
For sure. I mean, it's the most, like, it's the furthest out projection of any position. You have the physical and the technical stuff. I mean, it's, offensive line is not an easy position to play. And a lot of times the guys who have the most physical potential are not playing offensive line their whole career. Like, I think the majority of these, you know, kind of group of five FCS offensive linemen either made the switch very late in their high school career. Like Zion Johnson played 1 year of varsity football. You know, Trevor Penning was a defensive lineman. Tyler Smith was a defensive lineman. So I think that, and that's something we've kind of, that's a philosophy we folded into our rankings, you know, our process. Like if you look at our 2023 rankings, I think the majority of our offensive linemen, like either like began as defensive linemen, like Charles Jagusa, we ranked him as a top 50 prospect. And he had an offer from Iowa as a defensive lineman. You look in the state of Texas, Bobby, I know guys that y'all talk about all the time, like your Riley Van Poppels, Terrence Green, those kind of guys, Marquise Deal. Those are ones who, you know, I think if those guys embrace playing offensive line, they have immense potential. You know, like a Riley Van Poppel is a guy who, if he's in Iowa and goes to Iowa and plays offensive line, like that's a you know, has an athletic high ceiling to be a you know, a top draft pick. So it's a little bit of a projection from our part on, do these guys embrace playing offensive line? I think most of them eventually do. But you have to, it's a projection. Like it's a far out projection, and it's not something that's going to yield returns necessarily when they're a true freshman.
Yeah. And this is interesting. It's almost like you're talking about offensive linemen just have a greater margin for error.
They do.
I mean, it's plain as day. If you get 6 out of 6 wide receivers are 4-star and above, and only 3 of 9 offensive linemen are, it's a margin for error. One of the things I want to mention about wide receivers too, and this is something you and I were texting about last night during the draft, multiple positions. I know Garrett Wilson would have been, TJ Ford, the former Texas basketball player, says Garrett Wilson could have been an NBA point guard if he would have wanted to. Okay. Drake London has some basketball highlights that were freaky, right? Those are the top two guys in the draft. They play basketball. You and I are always big proponents of guys that play multiple sports across the board. They learn how to compete. They learn the nuances matter in sports and in different events. Have you done any study or any research that says that, hey, these guys that do multiple sports are the ones that are eventually getting to that upper echelon of the draft?
I think the majority of your top draft picks are multi-sport guys. I think, like you said, the competitive aspect. I think there's a lot of just technical crossover with like a basketball player. Like if you like, I know Doug Baldwin, who played, you know, who played for the Seahawks for a while, was said that, you know, he would work on his releases. It's like a crossover. It's like a legit, like a crossover in basketball. There's just a lot of open movement skills, kind of playing in an open environment, not maybe necessarily training a repeated thing over and over. The ability to react, I think, playing a live sport. Cause you think about football, you know, there's 10 to 15 football games a year. You have practice, live practice situations, but I think playing multiple sports is a chance to maybe do some things that you aren't going to do on a football field that can correlate. And then just with basketball, like ball skills, coordination, all of that. So we see a lot of that. And there's certain sports at each position that correlate, like shot put and discus is a great indicator for a guy who's playing on the line of scrimmage, whether it's offensive, defensive line. You look at the most of these top interior linemen that are going to go, you know, today and went yesterday, had really good shot puts. There's a lot of stuff with, you know, the 100 meter dash with corners in particular. Some of that also too with running backs a little bit. So there's certain things that we kind of hone in on as being really good indicators. But in generally speaking, I mean, I haven't pulled the numbers on it yet, but I would think, I don't know, the vast majority of guys who are going to be day one or day two picks will be multiple sports. I mean, Tyler Linderbaum, who you brought up, Bobby, the Iowa center, he lettered in six sports in high school. So there's multiple four sport athletes. I went through all of the bios and backgrounds kind of just in pre-work for the draft, and I'll put out content afterwards, like kind of just summing up all of like our takeaways. We'll probably do a positional series later over kind of a larger sample, multi-year sample, but it is a very strong correlation with multiple sport athletes. And I think too, it's also there's a chance you're going to be less of a finished product. Like there's more of a developmental upside with them once they do spend more time at football in football. And those are guys who are going to get better at the college level. And I think one thing that we try to focus on, and generally speak to me, the largest inefficiency in college football recruiting is the fact that the recruitment does not necessarily line up with the player's developmental curve. We see so many players that get really good as seniors. A lot of these guys we're talking about who were under the radar played their best ball as seniors. And I think philosophically for us at On3, and this is something that I've just kind of believed in, I believe now more than ever, like we're going to stretch that evaluation to the very last ranking, and we're going to, you know, heavily prioritize guys who play great as seniors, because you want to bet on ascending players.
Here, that's interesting. So this is something that to take into context what you're talking about. I was talking to a parent of a Nigerian player recruit. He said that, and this, you know, Texas fans are intimately familiar with guys like Alex Okafor or Brian Arakpo of Nigerian descent. He said that historically Nigerians actually start growing later than African Americans that grow up in America and have kind of they just have. And he said they don't really start fully hitting their growth spurt till they're 15, 16, 17 years old. And so I think that to your point about development, it's not just everybody starts growing at 14 and finishes at 17, right? Some people start at 16 and finish at 20. And that is going to be, I feel what you're saying, I guess, is what I'm getting at, because it's very true. And, you know, you mentioned the guy that's 260. Well, he's playing in four sports. The minute he stops doing that and focuses on one, his body takes a different shape and he's able to concentrate his muscles on just that. I want to go on to something else now. Texas, as you know, moving to the SEC, if not next year, year after, most likely. The SEC leads the NFL draft again in most number of players taken in the first round. Second, I think they had 12 by my count. I counted that really quickly. Big Ten had 7, ACC with 5, Pac-12 with 4, Big 12 shutout. Not surprising that the Big 12 shutout. There were no likelies to go in the first round unless Breece Hall was going to slip in there somehow from Iowa State, the running back. But as you see that, Georgia had five of them, actually signed six first round picks, if you include Jermaine Johnson, right?
Right.
That ended up transferring to Florida State. What is it about the SEC, in your opinion? I mean, Jerry and I have talked about it, but give us your version of why the SEC does so well come NFL draft day.
I think it comes down to, well, I think the footprint obviously probably has it covers the states that have the most talent per capita. If you look at our On3 draft by stars page, you can sort. It's really cool. It's for draft, you know, like football nerds like us get on there and there's a lot of stuff you can look at geographically and sort that out. But the top states per capita historically, you know, kind of span basically from Louisiana over to Georgia. It used to be South Carolina. My home state was top three per capita. It's actually taken a dip a little bit. But those are really the states that churn out the best football players per capita historically. So I think that's kind of where you start. And I think you look at the SEC and just how they prioritize football. SEC classes typically stack talent on top of talent more than others. Like you're talking about Georgia, you know, Georgia probably is going to sign like your Georgia's, Alabama's, LSU's, like historically they're going to sign 20 plus blue chip prospects. And the more of those guys you sign historically, and they're always ranked the highest in the recruiting rankings, typically the more of them you sign is just more bites at the apple to have, you know, these top prospects emerge and become, you know, high draft picks. So I think it's a numbers game, and just the recruiting footprint area is the best.
I think you're right about the recruiting footprint, because I looked at of the 12 first round picks that the SEC produced, 10 of them came from footprint states of the SEC, and North Carolina is not far away. Right. That in Missouri with Jameson Williams, I guess actually 11 of 12, because I didn't think about Jameson Williams actually from St. Louis being in that footprint anymore. But long story short, 11 of 12, it's not like they're going to California. They may go to California for Najee Harris or Bryce Young, but generally speaking, they're staying. Charles Cross, the offensive tackle from Mississippi State, from Laurel, Mississippi, and Treylon Burks from Arkansas is from Warren, Arkansas. It's not because they're going to Chicago to get somebody or up to the Northeast. Now those guys do exist, but it's somewhat rare when they go up there.
Well, I think one note too, to bring it back to the Big 12, I'm sure y'all probably dove into this more than me, but just from my perspective, I think the state of Texas recruiting has changed since A&M went to the SEC. You see a lot of these SEC teams coming in now more than ever. Recruiting the state. I mean, Ohio State did a really good job in Texas, starting with Urban Meyer, and they still are. You know, you think about Jackson Smith Njigba, who might be the number one receiver. I mean, I think he probably will. He's the odds on favorite to be the top receiver taken next year at Ohio State from Texas, Garrett Wilson from Texas. So I think those national programs going more national and dipping into what was typically a, you know, more of a Big 12 stronghold in the last couple of years, probably affected that number as well. And then also too, you know, like Texas has been down for a little bit, and that's going to affect the draft numbers with that. I mean, when you're top programs or aren't like hitting, then that's going to affect the total as well.
You know, I want to finish up with a question about this, and that is the Longhorns in the draft. Texas really has two, what I would call true draft eligible guys, Josh Thompson, the cornerback originally out of Nacogdoches, Cameron Dicker, the kicker and punter out of the Austin area. Not very much there. But early look at NFL draft, and I know you follow the Longhorns as well as every team around the country. What are the guys you think of when you think of them right now in NFL talent? Not just the ones that are going this week or this weekend, but overall. I mean, obviously, Bijan Robinson, right, and Xavier Worthy. Anybody else catch your eye at this point?
I think DeMarvion Overshown might be interesting next year. You know, if he continues to just kind of develop. Looking at linebacker, that's a position where we've seen length and athleticism be, more prevalent. Like you look at like last night, a couple of weeks ago, nobody would have thought Quay Walker was going to be the first linebacker taken. You know, if you watched Georgia, you wouldn't have thought that Quay Walker would have been drafted have N'Kobe Dean, but Quay Walker is what the NFL goes for now. The long, rangy, athletic linebacker, guy who played multiple positions in high school, can play in space. And he kind of really honestly, like in their scheme, maybe allowed N'Kobe, he and N'Kobe Dean complemented each other, but allowed N'Kobe Dean to play downhill a little more and do some, you know, played his strengths. So I was starting to look kind of just at an early, like what the, you know, the draft would look like next year. And I wrote DeMarvion Overshown's name down just as a, like a linebacker to watch possibly. I'm trying to think who else. I mean, Bijan is obviously going to be the headliner next year for Texas. And it's interesting because next year it's going to be a little bit of a test on running back value because next year's draft is very strong at running back. It is like, it's extremely deep. You're going to have Bijan. Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be, I think, a really good at Alabama, put in their offense. You have Tank Bigsby at Auburn, Devon Achane at Texas A&M, who's kind of an electric player. I'm trying to think who else. Zach Evans is one who, you know, if he gets everything together and has a really good year at Ole Miss, is a top talent. So that's going to be interesting next year to see how that tests running back value in the draft. And then I agree with you on Xavier Worthy too. I mean, he was the best freshman receiver in the country last year. His total package with kind of what he can do with his speed and ball skills is fantastic. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think with Texas, what I'm going to be monitoring, you know, Texas signed a great class last year in with a freshman. I'm going to be looking at like those offensive linemen, like which guys get on the field early, if any of those guys do. I think Texas's best, you know, draft, if you look at their roster and the talent, will be from that 22 class they signed, because they had a lot of like high upside guys. I think that could be top draft picks with the very important caveat, Bobby, as I'm sure you know, if they're developed properly, which has been the big talking point at Texas.
I think that Texas has a staff that will do that. Now my comments on what you had to say about DeMarvion Overshown is I'm still in prove it mode with him.
Sure.
Like he is a guy that this is his first spring where he hasn't been injured. So he's actually has taken linebacker reps, and it's only the first time he's been in the same defensive scheme as well. So we'll see what he looks like. Yeah. He looks like a great prospect, just like you're describing him. He doesn't always play that way at linebacker, at least hasn't to this point. One name I would give you to keep an eye on is the Wyoming transfer, Isaiah Nayor. I was extraordinarily impressed with him in a short period of time when I was down in Austin watching him. Charles, thanks for giving us a peek behind the curtain a little bit. I know that you've got some stuff going on, getting ready for the rest of the draft tonight. Got some articles to get out. For Charles Power, I'm Bobby Burton. This has been On Texas Football.